It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow. Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And I'm joined on this beautiful Friday morning, this fine Friday morning, this glorious day. There's not a cloud in the sky because the cloud is covering the entire sky. Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
So, you know, when you watch Saturday Night Live and half the fun of watching Saturday Night Live is watching them break. That's what I was just doing right now. So, you know what? We're just, Dave, let's just give it up. I mean, before we came on here, I mean, there were a couple of things in our personal lives that were a little tough this week.
We've been talking for half an hour before we jumped on this, and it's been the most maudlin, depressing conversation of your entire life, and it has almost nothing to do with UCLA athletics.
Yeah, and then we threw in some things about like what happened to UCLA this week. So we just admitted, okay, we gotta turn this around. We gotta turn our whole tone around.
And energy is up.
And then you did that intro, and I had to mute myself. Because it was beautiful. I'm good, Dave.
I'm so glad. Yeah, so glad.
And you are good.
I've never been better. Tip top.
That's fantastic. Yep. We got shape. So. I mean, it wasn't that great of a week for UCLA football, though.
It wasn't. So we've got a lot to discuss. So we're gonna start with football today because there was some big news this week. Most of it, pretty rough for UCLA football. We'll get into that in a second. Then we're going to talk about UCLA football recruiting. We'll talk about the Friday Night Lights that's going on tonight. And then we want to get into basketball recruiting as the transfer portal is still open and UCLA is still shopping. So, but we want to start with football. Two big news items this week. On Saturday, this past weekend, Hudson Habermill, UCLA, either 1 or 1A as the starting tight end, tore his ACL, leaving UCLA with just currently Maliki Mataveo and Jack Peterson as scholarship tight ends available for this season. And Jack Peterson has been dinged up himself. So at practice on Thursday, it was just Maliki Mataveo and Michael Churich, the walk-on tight end, and literally not a single other tight end on the roster. So that's not great. And then worse news on Thursday, Jay Tawia, who we've been talking about seemingly for months, I think it has been months, as a potential transfer casualty. And that wasn't just speculation. This was us, you know, doing that thing where we're like, hey, this is the thing that could actually happen. So, you know, keep your guard up. It did actually happen. 2 days after the transfer portal opened, he was not at UCLA's practice on Thursday. We're trying to figure it out during practice. And then as soon as practice ended, Jay tweeted out that he is indeed entering the transfer portal. So that is two key positions that both lost. And Habermill's a big deal. You know, that's a tight end who was going to play a ton of snaps this year. Tawia is the biggest of deals. That's probably the best NFL prospect on the entire team. The key to having a credible defense this year, more than likely, a huge, huge hole just opened up in the center of UCLA's defense.
Yes. And you know, like you said, we've been predicting, I mean, when I wrote the report about practice on Tuesday, my practical headline was transfer portal opens up and J2A was at practice. I mean,
woohoo.
Let's flesh this out because we have some information. I don't want to get up any, I want to get some, you know,
you don't want to raise hopes.
I don't want to encourage raised hopes. I think he will remain in the transfer portal and end up transferring.
But it's not done yet.
Not 100% complete done. Is there a slight door ajar that he could end up back at UCLA? Probably, but it's unlikely. Just to clear this up the situation and provide some information, he was offered a very sizable NIL deal, competitive with probably anything else that he might get offered.
And it matched the asks.
Yes. He asked, they gave it to him. And I think, there were some other little things that happened NIL wise with him over the last few months where Men of Westwood, actually gave in and not gave in, but gave him what he wanted. So there's that. I'd say right now, I think Jay Toia wants to be at UCLA. He wants to be in Westwood. They're like, I think a top three takeaway of reading and listening to Bro for a very long time is there are so many influences around these kids, whether they're recruits, players, especially now players with NIL, that are just really hard for these kids to shut out. And that's happening right now with Jay Tuia. Most of the time, those outside influences, those whispers in his ear win, as we've seen. I believe they will win in this case too. So that's where that is. If we wanted to, is there any more we need to talk about he was the best player on the team.
Yeah. And looked, people didn't come out to practices and drove. So I don't think people saw him this spring. He looked like half again as improved upon where he was last year, like another 50% improved. His body, we talked about this last week. His body is so much better. Like he looks like a pro lineman who is moonlighting as a college player right now. And so it's a big blow, not only for where he was last year, but where you might've projected him going this year. Like that looks like a first rounder to me. And so it's just in light of what we were already writing about the talent level. Like I wrote on Wednesday, the thing about the talent level being down. And that was when we were thinking, hey, you know, Jay Toia is probably sticking around at this point. You know, it didn't happen on Tuesday. So maybe things happened, but it wasn't a foregone conclusion that he was leaving. And I was still, the talent's down. Now without him, you're losing the guy who was the obvious, first 2 day pick, like the obvious, like top three round pick. And there just isn't another comparable NFL body on the team. I mean, I guess if J Mike has an awesome year, maybe he could go in the first couple of days, but otherwise it's just not, it's not a team overloaded with talent and they just lost the one who's obvious. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you want to get into like who specifically replaces him, looking at that group, just eyeballing him. And I don't know if this is just because he's the one who looks most like Jay, but if Siali Tapaki gets it together and really understands what he's doing defensively, I could see him rocketing up the depth chart because he's always played with some violence, with some anger to him. And he's got the physicality and the body for it. It's just learning how to play defensive line. He hasn't done it in years since high school. But Keanu Williams is pretty good, but he's not what Jay Tuia was. He's more of a plugger. He's not going to be the violent disruptor on the interior that Jay Tuia started to become last year. Sidiveni Havili-Kafusi is not that guy. And you know, AJ Fuimaono is still very young, so it's not a great situation.
It's not like back in the day when UCLA had its 6'1.5", 265-pound defensive tackles.
No, Chase Moline is not running out there.
There are actually some bodies. If Gary Smith comes back, that's a legitimate player. I mean, with no injuries, I mean, we're putting a good spin on this, but I do believe this. Gary Smith and Keanu Williams will be two good starting.
They'll be fine. Tackles.
But it's not, and it's not clear NFL level, and that defense needed something like that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's the best way to put it.
Yeah. So what that also does, you know, we've got our little football portal tracker. I kind of shifted around the portal wish list and the needs. It's amazing because I've got some of the needs, like the second pass rushing edge is number 7.
And that's a need.
That's a need. But ahead of it is first pass rushing edge, offensive tackle, defensive tackle, tight end. there's no way anyone can argue over these.
Well, and those four are must-haves. Must-haves. It's not just like they need those.
Yeah. So that's, you know what? That's what I should do. I should say these four must-haves.
Yeah. Maybe have a dividing line.
Yeah.
Cannot then, field a team without.
And then the more you think about quarterback,
yeah,
the more that's borderline must-have. And excuse me, cornerback. Cornerback and safety, I mean, you could really use one of each of those. And then second pass rushing edge, which you, I mean, if they, I guess in my mind, if they get an impact, there's two ways to look. If they get an impact one, a guy coming off a season who's had like, who had like 7 or 8 sacks, then I'll be okay. We've got one. You get Femi on the other side, which has been, they've been great. If they start using him more in that role as an edge, I say, okay, that's, but if they get a guy who like was a 4-star out of high school, but he went somewhere and he hasn't proven it on the field yet, then you definitely need two of those guys. So there's that. Interior offensive line is way down at number 9 because all of those are probably more important at this point. And then you got running back, which we have not been impressed with so far this spring. Dave, I mean, what's kind of the main topic of conversation on the forum is what just Jay Toia and the dominoes of that. And then after seeing this team in spring practice, where are we in terms of a projection for next season?
I think everyone should start from a baseline of this is a year zero. And classically what a year zero is a year where there should be absolutely no expectations, where it's all about recruiting, NIL building, all of that stuff. Now, the problem is, obviously, is that this isn't, the fan base is at a pretty low ebb. And how much goodwill will there be if the season is very bad? How much goodwill will there be in the recruiting ranks if the season is bad? That's the stuff you can't project. But I think if you're being fair to this coaching staff, if you want to be fair to Deshaun Foster, you have to treat this as a year zero because the talent is not there. They're installing new schemes, which they absolutely should do, but they might not have the right pieces for those schemes. And so this year, obviously they've inherited the program and they've been there for 2 months, but I would say mostly through no fault of their own, there's talent issues, there's holes, there's big gaps in what they need to field a really competitive team this year. So from a projection standpoint, I think they could have a decent enough year and finish 5-7 or 6-6. Like, I think that's possible, but I also think it's possible the bottom completely falls out and they go like 3-9. It's just such an unknown at this point. And so start here. Baseline is I have no expectations for this season. And now if they land a few guys in the portal, maybe you can start thinking about, okay, well, maybe they can do this or maybe they can do that. But start there. Start at, I just want to see that they've got a plan, that the attitude is really good, and that they recruit the hell out of the
That's the thing. We are at a point after Chip Kelly, despite 8 or 9 wins, there was just still a jadedness on fans following UCLA football, coming off of Mora's last 3 years. This has been almost a decade. then overall, if you really think you take away Moore's first 3 years, I mean, this is a long haul of disappointment for UCLA football. And UCLA football fans just don't have a lot of positivity. The positivity credit in the bank is dwindling.
Yeah.
To no fault of Deshaun Foster at all. But those kind of honeymoon elements that allow you, they could go down pretty fast. And a lot of it is so many things. If they have a really disappointing season, it's not like you can say, well, Deshaun, the head coach has a history of turning around programs. So that falls down, right? That's out. Recruiting is going to be so key. And in my opinion, if they don't have a season that they can sell, even 5 wins or 6 wins in a bowl game, less than that, it's going to be tough. But the way they can offset a lot of these lack of honeymoon elements is through recruiting, is to be so active in recruiting, to sell all these kids, because recruiting is about selling them on the future. You are going to be part of something. We are building something. If they're not a staff that is really active and really dynamic on the recruiting front, that's where this all lies for me. That is their only safeguard against a really bad season. And it's going to be tough to recruit with a bad season. So I don't think I can, I've been thinking about this for since J2, we heard about him and I got to this point. I don't think I remember a time when there was a program that I thought was so dependent on their effectiveness in recruiting. And this is it.
Yeah. And it's going to be quite the sell job. Like, it's going to be selling, a future. So the thing is, like, oftentimes a coach's second recruiting class, because they come in November, that second one, the first full one, is their best one. Because they can pitch not only their future, but they can pitch, hey, look what we did on the field this first year. We showed this, we showed that, we showed this. They might not have a whole lot of that second piece. So it's going to be, once again, kind of a vision class. And this is where, for me, and I don't want to belabor the past because it doesn't really matter right now, but this is why firing Chip Kelly in November was absolutely essential, or firing him in December. But giving the new coach a little bit of ramp up where they can bring in some guys on official visits for the December period, and they can bring in some more bodies in that period, and also just have an extra couple of months where you're not in spring ball, where you're not in the summer, where you're not in the preparation for a season, where you can start really attacking the junior class and the sophomore class too. Yeah, and they didn't get any of that.
Well, what they do have, though, there's a new era and there's a transfer portal. Yeah. So what you're saying is, before they get on the field and things don't go well, you sell yourself, you sell the future.
Yeah.
And that's what they would have had if, like you said, if they would have fired Chip Kelly earlier, they would have had more time. But now they've got a transfer portal and it's before they've ever stepped foot in the field.
Yeah.
And you can sell them. So right now, what they do in the transfer portal might be so key. It might not only just be guys you can plug in, but guys who, for whatever reason, have talent and have a good college career ahead of them, like Jalen Davies types, right? Who weren't happy where they were, and they're going to be of an eventual starter. You got to find some of those guys and sell them on the future too.
Yeah.
So there's some. That's why recruiting. It's not. It's the transfer portal. It's recruiting the 2025 recruiting class. And we don't know about the staff. We've heard some good things. They've shown some good energy. They've had a lot of guys on campus. Now it's all about consistency, being on top of the recruits, talking to them a lot, just out recruiting other programs. When's the last time? God, remember it used to, when the program out recruited other programs, We are now so jaded that UCLA is going to get out recruited.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a big thing, a big boost. And we'll just tell you, we here at Bro would be elated that we could sell this program, that we could, based on real fact, that wow, they out recruited this, all those other schools for this guy. That'd be great. So let's talk a little bit about transfer recruiting, which there hasn't been that much going on. We've been trying to find, you know, a lot of information and talking to some sources and things. I mean, most immediately, they just had a visit from Andrew Chambly, offensive tackle, transfer prospect from Arkansas. That would go a long way. He was a starter at Arkansas. He'll be a redshirt sophomore. 6'6", 305 pounds. To plug him in would be huge. That's a key. We were also reported, we broke all this news, Alani Makahele is an interior starter at UNLV. He'd be a redshirt senior grad transfer. He's coming in this weekend. He hasn't been offered yet, but it's believed he'll be offered this weekend. He will then also go to Cal, I believe. I don't know when. And Cal will probably do the same thing and offer him. If they could, right now, these are two guys they need. Like I said, if they can out-recruit everyone else who's involved with Andrew Chambly, that would be fantastic. And then get Makahele. Fantastic. That would be a great start.
Just fix the offensive line. So if they, let's just start there. If they just fix the offensive line, they get a real tackle, maybe get an interior lineman. If they do those two things, the offense should be fine. They'll have to do a lot more 11 personnel than I think Eric Bieniemy would like, but it'll be fine. They've got receivers. I mean, TJ Harden, let's just say he gets back to form by the time the season comes around. And Ethan Garbers, we know, is fine. The offensive line is decent, the offense should be fine. Like, it should be pretty good, but they have to get those offensive linemen.
Yeah. And I don't have the list in front of me. I know with Chambly, it was Kansas State. Not really high level. But still, I mean, we'll give it. We'll give them a lot of credit. it's Colorado, Maryland, SMU. So that would be fantastic. I think that's a plug and play immediate left tackle starter.
Yep.
Like I said, they need an edge. I really like the idea of Femi at functioning as an edge, especially now that Ali Kaho looks like he's returning. You could have Kane Madrano and Ali Kaho as the two interior guys, and Femi kind of functioning as an edge a lot, stand up edge. Dude, that guy is, and we suggested it. We've seen it now in spring practice, and he's looked good doing it, functioning in that role. So they get another edge to go along with that. I would start to feel a little bit better about the defense, but man, I don't know what you do at defensive tackle. You have to get a transfer. And it would be unlikely that they can get a transfer of Jay Tuia's stature. So wow, it's tough, but you're right. You're right. If they could just improve the offensive line, I'd feel a lot better. And then, I mean, we're shooting really low here. And then an edge pass rusher.
Yeah. They do those two things. I think we can start to think about, okay, is this a real bowl team? Go from there. But those are absolute must-haves. Because you can work around a tight end. I mean, lots of spread offenses do that. I mean, there were years where UCLA didn't have a true tight end on the roster. It's just, you know, are they going to show the flexibility to do that? You know, is that something they're interested in doing? So there's more questions, but offensive line, you figure that out, you've probably got an offense.
Let's go a little bit and just look at, you know, there was a thread about how many wins. And one of our posters, Deeper Sleeper, that's a great name.
I like that.
He made the point that the lower tier teams that on that schedule, Hawaii, Indiana, Minnesota, Rutgers, and, you know, Washington now, they've lost so many of their guys because DeBoer left. And Fresno State. Those are all very winnable games. The next level will probably be Iowa and Nebraska. Then you've got the games that you just have to project are losses, LSU, Oregon, Penn State, and USC. That looks 4-8 to me.
Yeah, that's
maybe
kind of what
I'm 5-7, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I'm smelling right now. So at Hawaii, got to figure that's a win, even with a depleted UCLA team. Indiana at home, probably figure it's a win. LSU on the road, a loss. Oregon at home, a loss. Penn State on the road, a loss. Minnesota at home, probably a loss. At Rutgers, that's where it gets funky for me. But I think Rutgers is decent, so probably again a loss. Nebraska on the road, just because it's on the road, I'd probably say a loss. But maybe, I mean, I don't know about Iowa. Iowa's just disgusting to watch.
Yeah, I think that's a loss.
Probably a loss. USC's a loss. Washington maybe a win, but it's at Seattle. I don't know. It just sets up where a lot of the road games are not super fun.
And then this is what I don't want to see. So they're at 4 wins. Something like that. And they got Fresno State in the Rose Bowl. Effing Fresno State.
Yeah, why'd you schedule that?
You can't lose that. That's one of the most important games of the season. They've got to win that game and end the season on a good note. No matter what you are, you lose to Fresno State, and that gets you 5 wins or 4. It's that puts the tone on the season, that on the off season of wow, that was an unsuccessful year. You lose to Fresno State.
I could see anywhere from 3-9 to probably 5-7 as like the likelihood band.
Yep. But we'll talk about it after the transfer portal.
Yeah, that's a right now thing. So we'll see if they can land a couple of offensive linemen, suddenly the offense is pretty good and you could see a couple of those flip.
On May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sanfel, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
So, Juan Castillo. I mean, that was a good interview.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy.
Yeah. I mean, if I were an offensive lineman, I'd want to play for him.
Seems like a really, and he was basically trying to get across, you know, he feels like a dad to these kids, which is, you know, that's kind of the feeling you want.
At least it's not a grandpa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that's football.
That's football. That's football. The sport.
That's kind of where we are. But this is, I mean, you know, using the F word, this is fluid. You know, last week we had some enthusiasm in our voices talking about this. So, you know, next week, let's be optimistic that next week we can be optimistic. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a downer week from a news perspective, but I mean, I think there's still, like, look, from a positive angle, there's still really good energy. Like, the team seems pumped up. I like that they're more competitive in practice. I think the bullshit, excuse me, about all the ACLs, those are fluky. The reason you hear about them is because Deshaun Foster will actually tell you. We never heard about Deshaun Morrell's second ACL tear. I'm not even sure if we heard about the first one.
And then what I really liked What I really liked is when you'd ask Chip something like that, and he knows, and he'd look behind you to look at the guy who was out on the field.
Yeah.
Like that BS.
So there was stuff like that where you just never hear. You're hearing it now. But ACLs, like that's just bad luck. Like that's not a thing that you figure out through training and all that kind of crap.
And it was all three non-contact from
That's just bad luck. I like that they're more competitive in practice. I think it will lead to a few more bumps and bruises in practice because they do have some tackling or some hitting more than Chip Kelly had. But I also think it just makes it more fun for the players. Like if you're a football player, you want to play football. You don't want to do two-hand touch all practice, every practice. And yeah, there's some benefits, but there's also some trade-offs. And I think, you know, for the team seems enthusiastic is, I guess, the point I'm putting out there. And I think that could lead to some beneficial moments on the field this year. If, you know, the team is playing with more general enthusiasm.
So let's talk a little bit about basketball transfer recruiting.
What a segue, Tracy.
Hey, I just give it to you straight, man.
You're just calling balls and strikes.
Yeah. They signed to Grandin Aids three guys. Sky Clark, the Louisville transfer guard. Mm-hmm. Kobe Johnson, the USC transfer wing. And then Eric Daly, the Oklahoma State transfer 4-3. And as we've been saying, they look really, really good for Dominic Harris, the shooting guard from LMU. We're kind of banking those guys, even though, I mean, Harris isn't 100% done, but, you know, feel pretty confident about that. You know, I just republished and updated the story on what is there left to do for UCLA transfer basketball recruiting. Right now, probably the big thing that the program's waiting on is Tyler Bilodeau, the Oregon State power forward. He visited UCLA last week. He then visited Washington, and he's in decision mode right now. I know he's calling both programs and asking them some follow-up questions.
Just so everyone knows, that's in space decision mode, not altogether in decision mode.
Yes.
Letting you know.
Space. Decision and that's mode. Confusing when you just say in space.
In space decision mode.
I from what I've gathered, I don't, it's not going to be that much about NIL. He probably might still cost whoever gets him a decent amount of NIL. But I don't think it's about that. It's mostly about how he's used, playing time, touches, shots. I think that's what that will come down to with Tyler Bilodeau.
Do you know what put me over the top for really wanting Tyler Bilodeau?
Well, for during the whole season, we kept saying it to each other. You know what want really that guy.
But do you know what put me over the top?
I don't. Tell me.
Do you know who his dad is?
I know about his dad.
His dad was an NHL hockey player.
Yeah.
Cuff ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I want.
Okay.
Anyway, so please continue.
Tyler Bilodeau, if they get Tyler Bilodeau, of course. You know, he's not a big need. He's kind of a want at this point. You could put together, if you get Tyler Bilodeau and then a post player, and we'll talk about that in a second, you are putting together a great roster if you get all the guys that they have. Tyler Bilodeau, you know, you got Eric Daly, and he can easily play the four and be very, very successful. Bringing in Tyler Bilodeau, who's most comfortable at the four, he could play some five probably, but you got some moving parts there with your players and a high level. He upgrades the talent and the college level talent to I'll put it this way. If you get him and then you get a good center, you're top 10, top 15 in the country talent wise.
If you get Bilodeau and a center,
top 10,
you're top five. Like, okay. that's a super elite
team. See, this is what I did. I set you up. I always went low because I want you to go higher so people remember you went higher.
Think about who gets squeezed on minutes on that team with Bilodeau. Because I was actually trying to do it the other day.
I know, so did I. We both did.
Yeah, yes, I did. Stefanovic, like, if they get Bilodeau, Stefanovic plays like 14 minutes a game next year. And he's a good player.
And Stefanovic, from what I know, signed his NIL deal for next year.
Yeah.
Which means he's in, dude.
Well, that's the thing. Is like, you're talking about guys who are legit college, legit, whatever, Power Six players or whatever it's called, who are going to get squeezed hard on minutes if they bring in yet another four and in addition to that a five. Now, if you bring in Bilodeau and you don't bring in a five, there's still ways to make that work. And it also probably doesn't squeeze the minutes as hard. But yeah, that's an elite team. That's a team that can win a title.
So let's talk a little bit about that. We know, and I've been reporting that, the brass ring is Cliff Amori, the transfer from Rutgers. 6'11", 240, you know, just...
Blocks everything, rebounds everything.
2.9 blocks a game, 10.5 points, 8-3. I mean, you bring him in and Tyler Bilodeau. Yes, Dave, I will agree. That's a top five level talent pro team. Wow. Just thinking about that is insane. Where they are with Clifford, he is visiting a couple of, well, first off, he released a list of 12 teams. He is visiting, said publicly he's going to officially visit Georgetown this weekend and Alabama next weekend. We know he will. There is a UCLA visit in the works. The dates haven't been finalized, and we had told you that he would visit five schools. This is going to be a long haul, and flat out is going to cost a lot of NIL, and I'm confident that UCLA has the money. There's always a resistance, though, like with Omar Ballo, the Arizona transfer to Indiana, whose price tag was 1.2. What if Amori is also 1.2? Do you pay that just out of, you know, do you want to give that much? Do you want to me, the way all of this NIL money is, it's just kind of monopoly money, right? It's just a game. It's not your money. You never see it. It's just, you're just moving money around and playing. If you got it, use it.
Yeah. My take on it would be there's no benefit to banking for later unless you miss on everyone. But the value in the NIL money is an investment in the immediate future that you can then parlay into more NIL money. Also, Clifford will be gone after this season. His money will be freed up.
Yeah.
Kobe Johnson will be gone after this season. His money will be freed up. So anything you're banking for the quote unquote recruiting future, you're banking it in an investment right now. Like, where do you want to stick your cash? Do you want to stick it in an investment, or do you want to just sit on it? It could turn into more cash if you invest it. A top tier player.
I can tell you what's happening in college basketball. What I'm hearing, you know, there are a lot of coaches that are old schoolish, and what they're used to, and in college football, you bring in recruits and you've kissed their ass as recruits, and then they're in, now they're yours, and they do whatever that you say, and you dominate them. You know, shut up, show up, put in the work, show me. There's a little bit of a different dynamic when the kid shows up and he's making $1.2 million. And coaches are struggling a little bit with that. They're used to these, you know, dictatorships. And so there's a resistance of, even if you got the money, do you want to pay that much? to a kid who they're used to just a kid coming in humbly and playing. I think they all, you know, generally the coaches that are still here and the coaches that will be successful are just going to have to get their mind around, you know, this whole issue, the morality of it, or what, you know, what.
I'm sure that's a big psych issue for a lot of college coaches, because it is and that's been the advantage for a lot of college coaches for a long time, and why some of them don't go to the NBA or some of them don't succeed in the NBA, because that's what the NBA is not. It is not a dictatorship. It was what Juan Castillo said it yesterday. You know, these guys call me coach. The guys in the NFL, they call me Juan.
Is that what he, like, yeah, I didn't hear that part.
But it's like that, you know, if who's the first one of these players is going to call him Mick, and will he survive the experience? You know, that's going to be fun to see.
Hey Mick, come on over to my $2 million condo. Could you, hey, you know what? I got a barbecue. Could you barbecue for us?
I'll pay you something.
And could you swing by, you know,
yeah, keep Gelson's. My dry cleaning.
Yeah.
I've got a thing tonight.
I just don't think that would go over very well with Mick Cronin.
You don't think that would be a winning play?
So with,
Mick Cronin,
your eyes can get really big about thinking about, you know.
My eyes can't get really big. I about, got a little beady eyes.
Yeah, so do I. We are a beady eye website.
Yeah.
About Cliff Amore, though. I mean, adding him to this.
This is as big as I can make my eyes, Tracy. This is a podcast, not a visual medium, but that's as big as I can go.
That's not too bad. I see a lot of white.
Yeah, there's a lot of white.
I'm very proud of you. Other options. Pharrell Payne from Minnesota. I think UCLA's kind of been stepping up its recruitment of him. 6'9", 255. He averaged one of the probably most improved players in the Big Ten. Knows the Big Ten pretty well. 10 points, 6 rebounds, just 23 minutes. You know, with so many kids, it's always going to be whether they will be able to play for Mick. So he might be number two on the list at this point. I'm kind of in favor of Justice Ajabar, the big from Harvard, 6'10", 255. He is not a scorer, even though he averaged 8 points. I mean, that's still not a score. If you're a post player and you're averaging 8 points a game, you should get that just from putbacks. You know, I mean, you're not a scorer. But 2.9 blocks per game, a really good post defender. I would be happy with him and Adai Mara in the post sharing minutes there. But I get all the other guys. I get, you know, Cliff Amore. You got to go after him and see if you can get him. There's also Brandon Garrison, sophomore from Oklahoma State. Big upside with him. You'd hope that Eric Daly might help with that. UCLA is still trying a bit with Danny Wolf, even though, I mean, when you read national news, it's Michigan or North Carolina on any given day, kind of at this point. There's another guy who's really intriguing, which is Greg Ozebor. Did you watch Utah State this year?
A little bit.
Wow. He's a little smallish, 6'8"-ish, 250, but averaged almost 18 points, 9 rebounds, 1.5 blocks a game. Mountain West Player of the Year. The thought was that he would follow Danny Sprinkle to Washington. That hasn't happened yet. There are some rumors out there that the NIL money he's asking Washington can't afford. UCLA does have some NIL money. They are talking with William Kyle, the South Dakota State post player. He would be a junior. In watching a lot of film, he's very reminiscent of a Dembona. I'd say, you know, 13 points, 6.5 rebounds, 1.6 blocks. I mean, that's almost a Dembona's season stat line. Really similar, actually. Those are probably the main guys at this point. You know, they're right now, like with, let's just say, William Kyle, he's visiting, he unofficially visited Nebraska. He's got official visits to Iowa State, Wake Forest, Kansas State, and I think Nebraska too. UCLA could maybe move its way in there with him. And then what I'm hearing, and I wrote this little significant note at the end of the update, is that there are rumors about other pretty high-quality post players that are still considering entering the transfer portal. Why so late, you ask? Well, I mean, I'll give you a little hint. There might be guys who are still checking out their NBA draft status who are probably going to be discouraged and then maybe want to enter the transfer portal. Woo, there you go. All the bros now. I've got the Google searching.
Somebody brought this up, but if Tyler Bilodeau ends up going to Washington, do you know what he'll be doing? He'll be going from Tinkle to Sprinkle.
Yeah.
You like that?
That kind of is almost too compelling not to happen.
Yeah, he probably needs to do that. He's got to go from Tinkle to Sprinkle.
Yeah. I mean, that is going to be a headline.
Sprinkle is heavier than Tinkle, don't you think?
Yes. Sprinkle.
A Tinkle is like a single drop, but a Sprinkle is like several.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, Mick would have to change his name
to Shower. Like, what would we be doing? But you gotta keep rhyme.
Yeah. Well, we'll think about that one.
Yeah. I think the actual next one isn't a rhyme; it's a trickle. So you would go from Tinkle to Sprinkle to Trickle.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Sure.
You with me?
Yeah, I'm right there.
What about Mick Trickle? That sounds like a rapper.
Okay. Right now, we had enough people last week really pissed off because we talked about
they were things. So mad.
Wow, so mad. Guys, can just let us speak a little, a few minutes.
Just about, a few minutes here, there, everywhere.
Tinkling. Anyway, to finish off the recruiting, unless you want to talk about post players.
No, let's leave them to do that where they find them.
There's also Trent Perry, the McDonald's All-American guard from Harvard Westlake, decommitment from USC, 6'3", 6'4". I like him very much as a player. I don't know if he's a fit at UCLA.
Because he chose USC.
Well, first off, he chose USC over UCLA for playing time. That right there isn't necessarily a Mick Cronin kind of thing. I would suspect he's still looking for playing time. He's going on a visit to Virginia this weekend. He's got a few other schools that he's involved with. I think Gonzaga, Oklahoma, Stanford. We can break a little news here.
Break it.
Before he is leaving for his Virginia trip this weekend, he was on UCLA's campus Thursday.
Boom, howdy.
Whether that means anything or not. Well, I mean, it does. Obviously, they are speaking. Considering Trent Perry in this roster next year, we were talking about what Bilodeau would do, and that kind of makes it complicated. Trent Perry, I mean, obviously, you have to find a scholarship. Mm-hmm. But, that makes it even more complicated. You'd have to think Sebastian Mack would look at that depth chart and say, dang, and maybe enter the transfer portal. Would Burke be Tunsil? You'd have to think Bilodeau, that would make him feel, okay, I probably have to enter the transfer portal. So those additions really, really make it kind of complicated. A lot of moving parts. I'm kind of skeptical UCLA gets Trent Perry. I think there were enough. We always call it the self-selecting kind of thing. I think there were enough elements of Trent Perry that he wasn't a fit for UCLA. I know he goes to Harvard Westlake. I know Mick Cronin has a good relationship with that head coach. He wants to establish a recruiting semi pipeline. There's Nick Kamanya, who is a 6'8" power forward in the 2025 class that UCLA has offered. That would probably help with him. So, this is all good stuff. But, you know, if you're talking, we can just simply talk about it. Dave, who would you rather have? Trent Perry next year as a freshman or Sebastian Mack as a sophomore?
Sebastian Mack.
Me too. I would be, if, let's say Trent Perry comes in and you've got Dylan Andrews and Sky Clark, who are going to be juniors next year. But let's say neither of them leave, right? They come back for their senior year. Is Trent Perry going to go into the transfer portal? So there's that. But literally next year, when we're trying to win, when this team's trying to win, who impacts that more? I think a sophomore, Sebastian Mack, who knows the ways of Mick Cronin's program.
Who will be in a much better role for himself next year. Second unit. You're just going to go in there and you're going to score, buddy, and do it as high level as you possibly can, and do it for 16 to 18 minutes a game. Great. Go for it.
I think Sebastian Mack has a, I think Trent Perry is a better long-term prospect basketball player.
Yeah.
I think Sebastian Mack has a bigger impact next year.
Yeah. I mean, if it was women's basketball and you get like 15 scholarships and you can stash them and you don't have to worry about the NBA poaching them immediately and you know all that, then yeah, you take Trent Perry. But I think you have to deal in reality here, and you don't want to just, I mean, there's a limit to how many you can fit on the boat. You add another person to the lifeboat, somebody's getting kicked off into the icy water, and you're not cutting fat anymore, you're kind of cutting into meat, and so you got to be really careful about just trying to assemble an all-star team and also to like right the wrongs from previous recruitments. Like you've just got to, you got to go with what you got. And they've got some really nice pieces now. I think we all understand what they need to still target. The Tyler Bilodeau thing is a excellent to have, not a must get with Eric Daly, but what's a must get is either Bilodeau or an impact five. And if you get Bilodeau, you probably still need a five, but an impact five if you don't get Bilodeau.
And I know what you would love, because you're a small ball guy. You're just fantasizing about Tyler Bilodeau at the five, Eric Daly at the four. Right?
As I've said,
that's your team.
They made a Final Four with Cody Riley at the five. And tell me like the meaningful difference between Tyler Bilodeau and Cody Riley, please.
Oh, one's much better.
Well, one's much better and one's more athletic, and it's not Cody Riley.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
there you go. I'd like to end this on a very optimistic note.
Please do, Tracy.
And that's UCLA NIL. UCLA when we're talking UCLA
NIL.
Basketball NIL, we're talking about all these expensive guys, you know, Tyler Bilodeau, Cliff Amore. I'll just say generally UCLA will be able to afford this. They will go in to either one of these, any situation, and be the program carrying the bigger bag.
So point of order here, because our message board, have you noticed this odd undercurrent of resistance to this new idea that UCLA has money in NIL now?
Yeah, it's, I get so it. They have they have PTSD.
No, but like PBS. Aggressive and like denying what we're telling them. And it's like, you know who we've done a podcast with now, like three times, right?
No,
we
have no connection. We're just guessing.
And it's just like that story came out about like all the different millions of dollars and Kansas having the most with $4 million. And it's not like we're dropping like subtle hints, but like we're not going to get
climate change deniers.
Yeah. We're not.
Oh, I just got political.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry about it. We're at the 52 minute mark. The only people listening now are sick.
No one's left.
The NIL situation right now, we're not going to get into the exact figures, but if you liked that story and you thought it was more or less on the ball, then you should be very happy with where UCLA's NIL is right now.
Yeah.
Very, very happy. Ecstatic even.
Now, one other bit. Moon. You got any more?
No, I got no more.
Okay. That was basketball. Now, we've always been, you know, a little, we've been telling you football has been kind of, you know, trailing basketball at this point. There was a lot of donor fatigue coming in football. Chip Kelly didn't do very much to promote any kind of donor interaction, engagement.
Who?
So everyone asked on the forum, why is basketball doing so well? It's because Mick Cronin has put in 5 years of donor engagement when Chip Kelly didn't. So then when you go to that well and say, hey, okay, we need you now. We need you. We went, what was the record? 15 and 17? Mm-hmm.
16 and 17.
16 and 17.
Count Chaminade, baby.
Oh, yeah, Chaminade. We need you now. This is the transfer class we're putting together. I'm winning a national championship. Got people jump on. You can't, you know, if you're the football program, you don't have those relationships. They don't exist. So, you know, Deshaun Foster was pretty much starting from square one. And then on top of it, you've just got the general malaise, right? Of, wow, I'm so burnt out on UCLA football. Not just donor fatigue of giving money, but just fatigue. But I can say there is, let's just put it this way. There's a potential deal that could be happening with NIL over the course of the next year, which will significantly boost UCLA's football NIL. You know, I don't know if it'll necessarily be available now we're April 19th and the portal closes May 1st. But it will have longer term impact. So football NIL is improving and there's something that will enhance it over the next year.
They need to start working, breaking ground on that Ken Grayworth statue.
Right next to John Wooden.
Yeah. Like super small. In his
golf shirt.
A cell phone just attached to his head.
His cargo pants. His cargo shorts. He's got to look golfy though. Very golfy.
Got to look super golfy.
Maybe in his golf shoes.
Maybe with a golf bag. No, maybe with a caddy behind him carrying a golf bag.
So you mean Mick Cronin carrying his bag? Woo! Wow! I'm over that one.
Nobody made it this far. Don't worry
about
it.
Okay, good. Okay. So yeah, overall, good optimistic ending to our podcast here, Dave.
Good optimistic ending to our show, to our mornings. All right. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods. Why is it four? Why do I say that?
I don't know. I like
it. Why is that a broadcasting thing?
Because you're speaking for me.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. What do you think? It was the number four?
But then you say something too.
Okay, I won't.
No, but I want you to.
Okay. Then just say, I'm David Woods and my partner Tracy Pearson. We will be seeing you next.
That's awkward. That sucks.
No, I like being your partner.
I'm David Woods. I'm gonna say bye now. And then that guy who's over there, he's going to say bye too.
Dave's partner.
Have a great one.
We'll see you later. Have a good weekend.
Oh, toodles.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount+.
Yes!